Guest on our program today, State Senator Jesse Green. Thanks for coming in, Senator.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
Hey, we've had we went by the first funnel. Yeah, as you told me before, that activity for that, usually most of it is done the week before you actually hit funnel week. And then once you get done with that, then you got a lot of things to take care of. So it's been pretty busy. What's been happening? A lot of floor stuff or?
Yeah, so actually in Senate rules this past week, the only bills that we could consider on the floor was Senate files. So just like the House, so we have our own personal priorities. We would like to get over to the other chamber to at least keep them alive for this session, have a chance to get through second funnel. But worst case scenario, let's say it doesn't get through the other chamber this year, it's still sitting there ready to go for next session. And so I always tell my colleagues, if it's the first session of an assembly, of a two-year assembly, don't worry so much about having a companion bill in the other chamber unless it's something urgent. But if it's a second session of assembly, you better have companion bills so that you give your bill the best shot to get passed.
A lot of times, leadership handles a lot of those or gets a lot of those lined up.
Actually, when it comes to that,
Get together with members in the House and say, here's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I've got a handful of representatives where I have good relationships, and I lay out what my top priorities are. Most of my top priorities have been done, but nevertheless, I still have some constituent bills that I can talk about here in a little bit that got out of the Senate and is now over in the House. But that's a lot of individual conversations about whether or not they should have companion bills in the other chamber or not. How urgent of an issue is this?
So. This is where you need to keep in contact with Chad and Carter.
Yes, yep. good relationships go a long ways.
And here's what we're thinking, and a lot of times you're working on the same things, looking at the same things. It's just a matter of making sure that we're still communicating. Who knows in the House? Sometimes different things come out, don't they?
Oh, every year I think that there's going to be fewer bills than the year before, and the House this year fooled me once again on that. There's a lot of bills coming over from the House.
So one thing, obviously, that at least when I talk to like school board people, and they've been busy getting ready. Well, of course, with the break, they not a lot more around over school things, but. The financing for schools, supplemental state aid, that's still kind of hung up. The Senate's got its 2% you're looking at, the House 2.25% plus some additional. And are we getting together at all, or have they started to talk together?
Oh, I guarantee leadership's been talking about it. But at the end of the day, the schools know that they can at least count on 2%. And so a responsible school district is going to be budgeting and accordingly for 2%. And then anything that's over 2%, they're just going to be happy with that little bit of extra that they can get. So the House definitely has some more one-time money expenditures within their plan. And I'm not necessarily opposed some of that, but nevertheless, with a 0.25% increase plus some of those one-time expenditures, you're talking the difference of it could be around $50 million. So that's not chump change, and so it's important that we be conservative. The REC came out with their revenue estimating committee numbers here a week ago. It looks like we're going to be down about $200 million compared to what we were expecting. So that changes everything, the calculus and everything, my budget and everybody's budget. But that was by design. We weren't caught off guard with that. That just means that taxpayers are keeping more of their money instead of shipping it to Des Moines and then trying to get it back in some other way, shape, or form. Our rainy day funds are full, and the taxpayer relief fund is full. So it's time that we start draining some of those dollars to make sure that it goes to what it's supposed to.
Reductions, part of the income adjustments, is that pretty much, that's what I seem to take from it, that they were looking at, and those were where we're seeing some of that now starting to have an impact, which was expected.
Yeah, between eliminating the retirement income tax, which happened right away a couple of years ago, but phasing in this flat tax, it was definitely by design that we don't need to have as much revenue coming in as what we were having prior.
So. I know, because you'd said before, you said, is I support this, but let's see the impact as we're going along and take it a step at a time.
Well, at the end of the day, most people are complaining about their property tax, yeah, not their income tax. So so there's two ways of tackling the property tax issue, either trying to restrain unneeded and future expenditures, or shift some of that burden onto the state. And you see that with education a little bit already, and also in the new property tax plan, where some of that effort is going to be to buy down the 540 levy on the education formula. And so so we need to make sure that we are addressing the concerns that the taxpayers have.
So that's, I mean, that's one of the things, and because that had just come out, that property tax proposal, they just rolled that out. The last time we visited, right before we visited, came out on Thursday afternoon. And the big thing was, let's take a look at it and see, and start to get some feedback and see what's happening. It is complex. Property tax is really not a simple thing.
Yeah, and there's no reason for it to be as complex as it is. One is most states have exemptions rather than tax credits when it comes to their property taxes, and so we rely heavily on tax credits when it comes to property tax relief. And so we see this as an opportunity to simplify a clunky system and to provide more certainty for local officials on their budgets. So right now, you see more of a year-to-year budgeting process, and I would like to see it to where as county supervisors can and local officials can plan their budgets 5 years ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And this will allow that to happen, because the heart of this new property tax bill is we're going to get rid of the rollback, and it's going to roll up over 5 years. Still have exemptions for and property tax freezes for 70 and over. We want to make sure that people that are on fixed incomes are able to stay in their homes and not be afraid of having to leave their homes just because of their property tax burden. But also, let's have a system that everybody can understand, that we're not continually shifting blame from one entity to the other, and provide more, a little bit of relief for our taxpayers. So within this bill, they're projecting about $400 million in property tax relief. To put that in perspective, that's probably about a 7% reduction in property taxes. That's the number one thing that I'm still investigating on, where that $400 million is coming from, because it's been sold as a revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. Or neutral to the state. So if that's the case, that means somebody's losing within that new change, and I just need to figure out where that exactly that's at.
Got the questions to get them answered. Mm-hmm. So a lot of other things continue to go on. I know this week, Senator Bisignano tried to do a move in the Senate to vote about about eminent domain, and mm-hmm. It didn't move ahead. Yeah. But those are some of the things you've been watching, because you kind of had some legislation. You have a group that were kind of looking at some things that you would like to do, but it wasn't really included in a lot of the discussion that's been going on.
Yeah, so the amendment that he tried filing was on our Senate rules. It was Senate Resolution 6, if I remember right, that we were passing. So every session of an assembly, we have to pass new rules as to how the Senate is going to operate. How do we bring bills to the floor? At what point do bills get taken off the calendar? Does the Senate Majority Leader have the ability and the power to bring a bill or stop a bill from coming to the floor? Those things. And those things are important. Process is everything in government. And if you look at a city council that, if you look at a city council that has a lot of dysfunction, it's probably because they don't have a lot of good processes in place. So this year we passed out these Senate rules, and I wasn't expecting a pipeline debate to come on our rules bill. And so I'll never forget when Bisignano filed this amendment, and he gets up and he starts talking about pipeline. I'm like, what are we talking about here? I thought we were talking about the rules. And so he tried to get it to where 26 senators can bring a bill to the floor without the leadership approval, and it completely sidesteps leadership with that. And he tried to draw a direct connection to the pipeline bill. And I have two concerns on that. One is we've had a pretty good smooth process for the last 5 years of how we operate in the Senate. And I get that we have difference in opinion between leadership and the rest of us on the pipeline bill. But But I don't think we need to throw a grenade into the system over one bill. And if and it's not just specific to the pipeline bill, this could happen on any bill if those rules change. And I just don't think that kind of chaos needed within the Senate. The other thing is I thought was really funny is he's speaking on behalf of the Democrat caucus like they're united on the pipeline. And the thing is, the Democrats a couple of months ago made a public statement, the Democrat chair of Iowa, that said the Democrats weren't going to take an official stance on the pipeline. So it takes 26 votes to get a bill to pass. And I could see a situation where the opposition party brings 26 signatures on a petition to bring a bill to the floor, and then once it gets to the floor, they won't vote with us just to embarrass us on the floor. You can't tell me that every single one of those senators believe in stopping the carbon pipeline. Let's just remember where it came from. It's come from our climate change fears, and that's what they're concerned about. So anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting theatrics from Senator Bisognano. He is very smart. He's a very good debater. But at the end of the day, I hope Iowans will see through that in the Senate, we are a body of that follows procedure. We're the deliberative body. And actions like that just create chaos.
Well, we do have a few other things that are going on when it comes to eminent domain. Some discussion's going to be going on about Highway 30. At least there's a House bill that's coming over to the Senate, it looks like.
Yeah, no, it's every year it seems like some conversation of Highway 30 comes up. And this one seems to be more broad as to just kind of giving guidance to the State Transportation Commission to prioritize Highway 30. And there's been some efforts in the past, but they usually fail in the Senate. So I'm kind of curious how this conversation's going to go. I mean, you can imagine there's some family farms that are right along Highway 30, especially west of Jefferson, that they're deeply afraid of an expansion of Highway 30, and they would no longer be able to stay on their farms and houses. So I really sympathize with their concerns. And so I'm definitely going to keep a close eye on this. I hope people will reach out to me as to their opinions, because I would have to say right now, throughout 5 years of service in the Senate, whenever somebody emails me about Highway 30, generally it's a 50-50 issue whether or not they're going to be supportive or opposed to it. Yeah. So feel free to reach out to me if you feel one way or the other as to what the future of Highway 30 should be.
Because with your district right now, you've got a sizable chunk that runs through here, and it does go from 4-lane down to 2-lane in your district. So
yeah, when I travel the district, I think there's a big difference between Ogden and Jefferson and west of Jefferson as to the traffic on Highway 30. So maybe we're talking a situation where we try to expand west of Ogden a little bit, and maybe forget about west of Jefferson. But I am deeply concerned about this. But there's a big difference between this and the pipeline. This is definitely public use. Nobody's going to argue that this is not public use, whereas the pipeline is not public use. There's something different about carbon that's not the same as other utilities.
And remember, this is just to start taking a look at, let's look at what we can do to improve the traffic through here. I can imagine it going through Carroll would be a bit of a challenge. So
yeah, as I read some of the summary on this, the thing that pops out to me as maybe the number one talking point is that 80% of these funds would be coming from the federal government. And I don't really like that mentality where we're just going to spend money just because it's the federal government's money. It's still our money at the end of the day, and we need to be fiscally responsible with these projects.
Let's talk about education, because that's been the hot topic in the news within the past, 24 hours or so. I know Governor Reynolds, earlier, basically, she had said, and our Department of Education said, if you're going to break up the Department of Education at the federal level, let's do block grants. And, send the block grant here, and our Department of Education will do what we need with it.
Well, back in the, I think it was the early 1970s, where the Supreme Court made it very clear that it's the state's responsibility to handle and implement education within their states. It's not the federal government's responsibility. And then just a few years later, you had Jimmy Carter that established the U.S. Department of Education. To me, that's a big 180 difference as to the philosophy of who's responsible for what. And ever since then, we've seen a huge increase in the bureaucracy there. And I think most people would argue that since the 1980s, our are test scores better across the United States than they were before? And I would think that most people would think maybe not. But when you look at the dollars and cents of this, in Iowa, about $2,000 per student goes into the classroom from the federal government out of about $19,000 altogether. And so you can't tell me that we, for one, even if they didn't ship us any money from the federal government, the state could probably figure out how to handle that financial component. The federal government just wants to get their fingers in there and with strings attached saying, hey, you will do this and do that and take away our power just for a few pennies on the dollar. And so I'm really super excited about this because this is purely just going to empower the states to have healthier conversations as to how we should educate our children. And I think at the end of the day, the government that's closest of the people is the most accountable, is also the most efficient and most effective. And so I think most people across both parties, when you actually scratch underneath the surface, are there's got to be some bipartisan support on this issue, because altogether it's about $7,000 per student that the government spends from the federal level on students. But yet, like I just said, there's only $2,000 that's coming into the classroom from the K-12 perspective. And so you can't tell me there's not a lot of fraud and abuse within that structure.
So we know that, well, there may or may not be the fraud and abuse part. The waste would be probably the big thing. Where's that?
Or waste. Yeah, to me, it's all. But nevertheless, like, what a time to be chair of education budget. So I chair the education budget in the Senate that deals with everything that's outside of K-12. So, nevertheless, I hope Governor Reynolds gives me a call and hands me a big fat check with it as well. So.
And says we have to figure out how to best apply this.
Yes, yes.
And then that means that we go to work.
Yep.
We'd have to go to work at our level and see how.
The last time I was in D.C., I'll never forget, Vivek Ramaswamy came and spoke to us, and he said, guys, I'm going to have to apologize. Like, you guys are going to have to work harder here in the near future. Get ready, because the power's coming back to the states. And I'll never forget that speech that he gave.
So that's going on. You do have a number of things that are coming up next week, school-related. Again, a lot of it is just regular routine kind of bills and legislation that it looks like, investigative procedures, things like that. What else is coming up that you're looking at that we really needs to be worked on? Because we still have budget time coming, and I know budgets are going to be, mm-hmm. now with the REC numbers, that creates some things to work on.
Well, you know, that leadership conversation about SSA is out of my hands, but I sure hope they kind of wrap that up pretty soon, and so we can move on and talk about other things. But I've got some bills that have popped out of the Senate into the House. I'm going to try to encourage Chad and some of them to help get those bills across the finish line. I'm really excited that it appears most of my personal bills are going to get to the governor's desk, and cross your fingers. But the other thing, as we mentioned earlier, the House has passed over quite a few bills compared to the Senate. There's a higher education committee that's over there that's specifically designed for the regents and community colleges, and they've passed over quite a few bills that are DEI related. And so I need to sit down with the education chair in the Senate and kind of go through what those bills are going to be our priority, because if we don't pass some of those bills, I guarantee you the House is going to try to put those on my budget at some point, and I need to be prepared for that. So also in the Senate, you have the U.S. Civics bill that I'm in charge of. I'm really excited about. Jerry Bain was passionate about that. And that is just would require kids to get 60% or better on the U.S. Immigration test that immigrants have to take to become citizens. It's a 100-question test, just basic things about U.S. government. And I think there's a lot of ways that the teachers can use that in their classes to educate their kids about a whole host of issues. But for sure going to pass that out of the Senate here at some point. The House has a companion bill that's ready for the floor as well. Lastly, I've been hearing from some constituents about some concerns with our salary bill. The last time salaries were raised were in 2005. It's been over 20 years since legislators have gotten a pay raise. I think most people agree that every once a generation, a legislator should probably get a pay increase. But a lot of the concern seems to be around the governor's salary. If I understand correctly, the proposed bill If it passed, it would make her the sixth highest paid governor in the United States. Some people have some concern with that. So we'll continue that conversation and see if this is something that we should do this year or if it needs to be tweaked. As of right now, it's just a Senate conversation, so the House can amend it accordingly. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, I've heard very few people have concerns as far as the legislative side. The proposed increase would be to $45,000, if I remember right, on the legislative side.
Okay. Anybody come down to visit you lately? That's I always like to ask that to see.
Yeah, so lately I've seen some the county farm bureaus came down a few days ago. Also, that was the same day that some FFA students came down. So it was really fun to talk to them about some ag issues.
Association of Counties, I think, had some people down there.
I saw Scott Longhorn, our new supervisor. He had his cowboy hat on down at the down at the ISAC meeting, and so it was fun to catch up with him and see how he's getting along. I really appreciate our local officials. They're the wheels in the ground, and they catch a lot of the heat sometimes that should be directed at me, and so I appreciate their work. But with these property tax changes and stuff, I think a lot of county supervisors appreciate a little more conversation than usual to make sure we're on the same page.
They do like to let you know what their projected impact might be locally. So, and I'm sure you got three counties? Yeah. Well, three and a half. You got three and a half, really.
Yeah, so I hear from all of them, Story County, Dallas, Guthrie, Greene, and Boone. And I give Boone a lot of credit. They do a good job communicating. And Guthrie County, they have some unique emergency management budgeting. There's some 2080E agreements with neighboring counties. And I can tell you that the Senate Ways and Means Committee applauds them for being kind of front runners on that, on trying to be effective in how they implement their emergency services. And they're certainly doing a good job being good stewards of the taxpayer dollar.
Busy week next week coming up then, and more debate, more discussion going on. So
yeah, we'll keep chugging along. And again, I would sure appreciate some feedback as to what people's thoughts are on the Highway 30 situation. And so just reach out to my legislative email, put in the title Highway 30 so I can kind of collect those emails.
Give you an idea. Okay. Yep. State Senator Jesse Green, a guest on our program today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.